Jeffrey Gettleman is a happy man who works in places of unbelievable conflict and misery. His joy comes from being able to find and convey the extraordinary power of the human spirit, regardless of the cruelty it faces in our time. Gettleman is East Africa bureau chief for the New York Times. He dreamt at age 19 of leaving his suburban Chicago upbringing and seeing the world. His first humanitarian trip to Africa in the 90s sealed the deal. But to get a real reporting gig with the Times, he had to make detours in Tampa, Los Angeles, and the Deep South to Iraq and Afghanistan, all while trying to maintain a life, wife, and his dream of a family, children. Gettleman writes about his many loves and his many journeys in a new book, Love Africa, a memoir of romance, war, and survival.
A lot of what I cover is conflict and war and sad, miserable stories. But I feel a responsibility to do that because not that many correspondents are still left in this part of the world. There's only a few big media organizations that are supporting people like my job over there right now. And these African countries are often very tightly controlled with no freedom of the press and no independent journalism. So if I find out about something happening in Rwanda, there was a story I did about all these street children disappearing from the streets of Kigali, the capital, and it ended up that the Rwandan government had set up a prison camp on an island in the middle of a lake, and they were shipping all these young people to this prison camp with no due process, just scooping them up off the streets, putting them in the back of a pickup truck and taking them to this island for 3 years. And when I asked the government, I said, hey, you guys take them to court or is there any kind of process to decide if they should be going to this island? They said, no, these people aren't criminals. And I said, well, are they free to leave? And they said, no. And I did a story about this whole phenomenon and nobody else had done that. And if I hadn't done that, I don't know if the word would have ever gotten out.
Part of the story you tell in this book is the story of how, you know, correspondents fall in love with their mission and people fall in love with swashbuckling, adventure-seeking correspondents. And this narrative is sort of both the absolute joy and agony of your life trying to reconcile these two. Explain.
Well, I didn't get into the business to be a danger-seeking adventure guy.
Which is, of course, what they all say, but please continue.
Yeah, I mean, yes. I mean, maybe I am sort of an undercover adrenaline junkie, but I wanted to be in Africa first. When I was a young guy, I didn't even know if I wanted to be a journalist. I wasn't focused on that, and I struggled for a while. I was pretty lost, and it was very uncomfortable. Coming out of college, being in graduate school, around all these bright people that seemed to know exactly what they wanted to do, and I felt like an imposter because I didn't know. I didn't have a plan. Once I sort of set my sights on becoming a newspaper correspondent, I did that because I wanted to live and work in Africa. That was my goal. And it was a long route, and it took me through Central Florida. It took me through, you know, California, this deep south, all over, Iraq and Afghanistan. And I did all that because I wanted to live and work in Africa. And then once I got the job, it was like a dream come true because I now had the resources and the excuse to go and explore all these places I'd always been dreaming about, like Congo, like Sudan, like Rwanda and Uganda and all these countries that had their own stories that I had read about that I had never actually experienced. But there's a personal cost because the work is very absorbing. It's at times dangerous. And it's not just about me. So now I have two kids and a wife in Nairobi. And
how did that even happen? How can you meet someone and, you know, make the judgment that actually we're going to be together enough to, number one, be able to have kids, and number two, for a relationship to be sustainable?
Well, my wife and I met when I was very young. We were in college, and she always knew this was something I wanted to do. So even though there was a lot of back and forth and a lot of agony that we put ourselves through trying to make the right decisions about being together, she knew this was something I wanted to do. And when we first moved to Kenya, we traveled together. She's a lawyer, but she took some time off and was filming videos of the stories that I was working on. So it was wonderful. We went to Darfur, we went to Mogadishu, we went to Libya, we went all around the continent.
When have you been a target?
All the time. This is it. Like this part of the world, they don't like journalists. They don't have respect for what we do, the governments. they see us as a threat because their own people don't have the resources to write the bad stories about them, so we're the ones that are the biggest threat. I was thrown in jail with my wife in Ethiopia for a week early on in my tenure, and I was shocked. Ethiopia is an American ally. They get $1 billion every year from American taxpayers, and they had no qualms whatsoever putting me in jail for a week because they didn't like what I was writing, which at the time was a story about human rights abuse committed by the Ethiopian military. So you're constantly worried about so many different things on every story. You're worried about being kidnapped by bandits. You're worried about getting caught in a crossfire where maybe, you know, there's violence going on around you and nobody's trying to hurt you per se, but it's a violent, chaotic, lawless place. Anything can happen. And then there's this piece of trying to kind of sneak around the government and do your work and do it honorably and avoid the repression that they squeeze down on everybody in their country, and they're trying to do it to you too.
How do you explain to people in Africa what's going on here? Is Donald Trump our Mobutu, our Marcos, our Selassie? Do they understand such a character, or is he just not understandable?
He resembles the African big man more than any other president of the United States ever has. He talks a lot. He's a celebrity. He has a lot of money. He kind of throws his weight around. And that's exactly what these guys are used to seeing. But people now are concerned about the United States because the U.S. plays a huge role in Africa with humanitarian aid, with military assistance. And now that there's talk about changing that, people are very, very concerned because right now there's four famines about to happen across Africa and the Middle East. And if you go to one of these, you know, refugee camps, all over you see these huge bags of food that say donated by the people of the United States, a big bag of sorghum or wheat or beans. And that stuff keeps people alive. So if there's a serious, you know, change in that policy here, it's going to be felt all across Africa.
Finally, your book is called Love Africa, a memoir of romance, war, and survival. Could it also be called The Last Correspondent?
No, I think there's always going to be an appetite for on-the-ground reporting. I think there's always going to be an audience that wants our real experience when they're reading a story, to feel the place, to smell it, to see it, to try to understand it, even if you never go there.
Well, Brother Gettleman, you've done fine, fine work. Congratulations, and may you do much more of it. Thank you so much.
I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Jeffrey Gettleman is the East Africa Bureau Chief for the New York Times. His new book, Love Africa, a memoir of romance, war, and survival, is out now.